create that idea, not just die. You know, you yourself will not die also. Biologically, yes. But the mind created the idea, which is not going to die, it's going to be immortal. The mind which produced it has to be immortal also, and even more higher.
Well, I was saying Florida because all the universe is placed in a certain way that conjures harmony and constructive universe, you know, with the nature, wind and water, creatures, animals, beings, all created in a preordered fashion that it was there for a reason, and it was placed in this for a reason. And when you talk about two churches, not working in harmony because their nature hasn't been in touch with their nature.
Another cool thing is this circle and the square is like E equals MC squared. Look, it's impossible. Listen. It's impossible to make this square into a circle, but it's impossible to find out the unification formula that Einstein was trying to do before he died. He's trying to make a square fit into a circle, but he's doing it at such a degree that he discovers stuff, for example.
What
does that make sense? Unifying two churches together. That's like putting a square into a circle, but he does it.
You cannot define this specific human quality of creativity mathematically.
I'm trying to say the way of thinking. We got to get two extremes.
It's always changing. That's the reason why. It's a rate of constant change. You can define it from the notions of an example, a metaphor, poetry, this kind of higher art that you can define math. But the mathematical tool we have, you can't. It's
impossible.
No, the thing is, you can draw a circle after you
make
a square.
Yes, not mathematically, not algebraically.
Mathematically, also, the real problem was that you can make a square that has the same surface as the circle.
Yes.
I mean, that's the problem.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
The paradox.
You can define a
but
square geometrically.
You have
can
the diameter.
You can define.
Yeah. This is the diagonal, and you can find the square. I mean, it's not that hard. So the problem was the thing that you can draw a square equal to the surface of the circle, because the circle is PF square, and the square is without P.
I think that's the key thing is that the misconception that a lot of people have is they're not thinking in terms of processes. Like here, what we're relating are processes of squareness or linear to curve. These are two processes that are interacting that are not. You can describe them in a mathematical way to some degree, but you hit these limits, these boundaries. But you can break out of those boundaries and conceptualize it as physical processes. It's like that. What you're bringing up was interesting because, I don't know how much you. Well, you look at somebody like Kepler, and there was certain assumptions that Kepler began with way before he had discovered gravitation, which was that that the universe exists and it's harmonic. It's ordered in a good way. God created the universe and created it good, and it's noble to man. So his hypothesis that he was sure about was that the five nested solids. So if you think about it, and we should work through this. If you begin with a sphere, kind of like a circle, a sphere, you can only produce five regular shapes that have equal size angles and surfaces, faces, and only five. So there's a certain boundary limit to how many you could produce within the boundaries of a sphere. Now, if you nest those, that's one. That's a good point. That's a decagon. Now, if you nest them into each other, so if you take a cube, take a tetrahedron, get a big box over there, but you can literally fit them inside each other and calculate the distances that separates them, each one, from each other. And there's certain ratios that pop out. Now those ratios are highly, very, 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 very close to the distances of the planets from the sun. Highly close. And Kepler's time, he was sure that was the key that nobody else was thinking about, because nobody before him had done anything other than simply describe the motions of the planets. For years, that's what he was trying to prove. And he realized, this is the ideal, this is the perfect truth that I want to prove. But he started encountering these little problems along the way. Like there were these little discrepancies. So the physical geometry of simply, taking linear dimensions and trying to like assume that that's what the universe is, didn't work anymore, and he had to go to a new domain from the vision, which is the realm of geometry, and he had to come up with a new hypothesis, which involved what's the other major sense that you have, if not sight. So it's by looking at now the harmonic ordering of a string that this is where the Pythagoreans come in, Kuza, it becomes valuable, because you realize, okay, by now looking at how you can divide a string in certain ways using geometry that produces a certain harmonic ordering, now I'm seeing I can resolve some of these paradoxes that were arising when I was trying to just find the exact physical distances based upon the solids. But even that, he was encountering more and more problems. Like after a while, he was able to discover that all the planets are arranged in a harmonic way, but it's not perfect harmony. It's not singing the exact same song year to year to year, because the orbits are fluctuating, pulsating, right? There's never two orbits that are exactly alike year to year. So he had to develop and discover that the planets are not only singing together in a harmonic way, but they're tempering each other. Just like if you have two choruses singing a song, a Bach motet, it'll never be exactly the same. Every individual voice will calibrate to the whole slightly differently every time. So you're always going to have, or their intentions, what the composer is encouraging the different singers to think about, is going to be slightly different every time, right? So you're never going to have two songs that are performed the exact same way. And that imperfection is really perfect. And that was the only way you were able now to get an Isaac Newton later on to plagiarize all of his works and remove the actual beauty of how he discovered them and simply give you a little discord, a formula. You just jam into your head and recite on cue on a test.
Sorry,
so
that's
not
true. If you're like a FF fan, then I can go.
Alright,
good. Hey, I'll hold on like that.
Yeah, Kathy and the sense of touch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't. Before the sight, before the hearing, the sense of touch.
You never shake hands with somebody more often than that. You shake hands 5 times before you say hello. Yeah,
but that's really interesting what you're
saying.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I didn't know the planets.
You didn't know planets? Sun?
Where have you been?
Everything in
sun. Yeah, well, that's really strange.
It's like good.
It's, I would. By working on these work on by Kepler, this first intention to actually have the hypothesis that you can know something, that's pretty old as an idea, but for long periods of time it was lost, and that's where Dark Ages come in, and it. I was just reflecting to that idea of the hypothesis of the higher hypothesis, like what governs all these things that you see interacting with your senses or with your mind, how you perceive them. Also, made me reflect on another feature in the video and the question. question of, well, how, what, I mean, the question of the higher hypothesis, what governs the whole, and also that, okay, so these ideas are there, but they can be forgotten. So how do you grasp them again? Now how do you get them back? You know, how did Plato come back into Europe? Because he was, you know, was missing.
It just provoked me a question. I don't know. I want to share it with you guys, but what if you're facing a dark age? Is there any arbitrary way to get out of a dark age?
It's arbitrary way.
I mean, can you
by
get
arbitrary.
Out?
Do you think by arbitrary?
Getting out by mistake.
Like any old.
Yeah. Do you get out of a dark age by mistake? Like,
no.
Do you just
yeah.
stumble into a renaissance? Oops, I found a renaissance.
I was
oh, nucleus of Kuzo, I farted a nucleus of Kuzo. No, but the thing is, you say these ideas had been there before this renaissance, or the Kuzo renaissance.
Yeah.
So, what it told me, what I saw, is that these are like this is like the tools that is what you have at your disposal as human beings
mm-hmm.
in those times to pull you out of this darkness, pull you out of this dungeon,
mm-hmm.
right?
But it's the people working together.
No, it's the ideas.
It's the ideas.
How to create an idea?
The ideas will organize your mind. Of the leader who is organizing society.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a leader who doesn't have organized mind, he's going to screw it up.
Well, I can tell that. You know, I find that. I find that.
That's really
well, first, to find the darkness, right? You have to think of yourself like, okay, where you are in the moment of what can I think like a problem? You have a shit problem. What to do?
No. We're not reliving experiences
yes.
of how we get out of our problems in the past. That's
no,
what we're doing here.
It's like the same thing, like the darkness. If you are living in the darkness, how to?
But in examples, facts are a lot easier to understand than examples. Examples.
Facts. Okay. One facts. Yourself is in the dark, thinking, okay, I'm in the dark.
So what's the idea?
The idea is.
The light.
Light.
Let there be light.
Find the light. Or what did you understand the darkness means?
Well, what is light then?
To understand, well, light or to understand dark, we can explain it for the sense that but dark and light are words to explain the word is light or something with the outlight.
Yeah, no,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible to explain it. Why or what is possible and when. And the reasons to be endured is to be blind
with the
to watch to do not to don't see or you see it. It's like we're talking about that story. We don't know if we create wheels.
My neurons.
So what are you where are you getting where are you going with this?
I'm going to where you might start creating ideas on for mysterious, scientific, or magical, or whatever you can call it, you get attraction for some things. But like what you said, how can I get out in the dark if we don't understand the word dark?
Well, I think we're getting lost with what you're saying right
mm-hmm.
now. Like it's very confusing.
Well, you have
so
to specify.
So to get out of a dark age, it takes leadership and ideas.
Yeah.
You got people like Roosevelt. You got people, you know, people with the good ideas. You gotta. That's what we need. That's what people need. Leadership.
Well, you need the science, right?
That too. So, yeah.
You need the ideas which are true and remain true to guide you.
The media is totally destroying truth.
But also, it's not only like being guided by some mystical force. You have these principles which exist in you, divine nature.
Questions.
And your identity as a human being created in the image of the Creator. Now, maybe it'd be useful to really reflect on this, maybe not just now, but generally reflect on this question of what does that imply? If of all the species, of all the created inventions, of the created creatures of the universe, why is it that only the human beings have that specification where we say created in the image of the Creator? What does that imply? Who's the boss? Who's going to are we waiting for something to come and magic show magic of what we need to do to get out of the dark age? Is that how it happens?
First, we have to start with questions and answers. That's the point of the reasons that
that's a good point. Where does this come from? Like, the guy didn't just trip, hit his head, and be like, whoa, I got a good idea. You know?
It's going to be a conscious effort.
Yeah.
You know? It's not just like, it happens out of sight. But it's really something which is conscious. I mean, something which actually we're going to do tomorrow, in a sense, that we're not going to reinvent the whole world. We're going to try to figure out how other creative minds thought and how to replicate that in our own mind. You know?
Cool.
Which is a process. I mean, learning should be that. That's why schools are, you know, Plato's Academy was created.
I think that's it. I think school, that's what he did. He started schools. He took all the poor kids off the street, showed them how to read and write. They copy it. I think it's school.
And learning.
And when people don't have education, what do? They drink, they live on the street. Or they're on chômage, and they just get money from the government. If a person is educated...
I have something I want to read.
Yeah,
he said what he did. The system is... It's the place of deception.
I think it's got an education.
After the seven,
like, if people are educated, then if someone comes to them and says, hey, I have something called money, you'll know. You'll be like, if you're educated, you'll be like, I don't need money.
Or why do you want to use that money?
Yeah.
What's your intention? What's your intention?
Exactly. It's not
know that.
It's probably just, it's education. Is
what's that?
We all learned that.
Oh, last week. Read it.
Yeah, I don't think it's less true this week than last week when we first read it with Megan. Mm-hmm. But because we touched on this question of first of all, like, if you pull out these kids from the street, right? I would propose to argue that the thing which gives people out of the street or stops drinking or whatever is when you have this sense, this orientation that there is a direction with your life, that you know that there's some place where you're going. And if that is what you do to individuals, like if you're like therapeutic, like a counselor or whatever, you do that for the individual. Now, what do you do for civilization? What do you do for when the whole world is hitting depression at the same time, or destruction, or facing annihilation, right? So I wanted to read this quote by Kraft Erika, who's a giant German space pioneer. He was making rockets. And I'm going to, bear with me, it's like this long, just so you don't get discouraged.
Yeah. Wow.
Let me read this. The therapeutic value of positive goals is known to every psychologist. Improving education, conquering diseases, providing better living conditions are positive goals. But space exploration is a stronger goal, simply because it is one of the reasons which makes these other goals worthwhile. For what good is it to create better men and women without providing an opportunity for them to apply their better qualities? Space exploration is one of those opportunities. Indeed, the wars and confrontations of the 20th century have shown what the advancement of science, technology, medicine, general education, more housing, and better roads can do if there is not, at the same time, a generation of greater goals toward which the new mankind can exert itself. In the bygone era, the great goals were the conquest of hunger, disease, illiteracy, slavery, and poor living conditions in general. These are no longer primary goals, but mop-up operations. Space is one of the great primary tasks of the new era. Space operations, be they allied to exploration or applications, have become a symbol of that certain attitude of friendly rationality which alone can bear peace if people and nations apply it in dealing with one another.
So, that's good. That explains it pretty well, too. Because
mm-hmm.
Very
poetic.
With space as the ideal, but the lower we go down in an age, the darker it gets. You gotta fall back on those. Because if you, literally, like, let's say something happens after September 30th, and infrastructure, everything's down, dead, we're back dark ages, old school style, we're stuck planting our own food, raising our own cattle, we still gotta go back down to that one level that one person took it to. We have to be able to learn this. We have to be able to do this. Because then it makes it right. With our current monetaristic and dictators south of us, they're holding back education, they're holding back expression, creativity. They're killing people.
I would argue that's not even true. They're not holding it back.
Mm-hmm.
We're breaking out of that previous boundary.
250 years ago.
No, I mean, what? Think of what LaRouche has been able to accomplish with one. He only had one life. He didn't have two lives, right? Not that I know of, right? So he. Think of what that means. That one individual can pick up not only his name, but the whole humanity with his mind and strength of his mind and devotion of his life to this idea of committing oneself to doing something for which we will not pluck the fruits off the tree. I mean, if one guy can break through the educational apparent control, right? If one guy can do that, what can 99% of the population who aren't Venetians do? If one guy is able to leave the LaRouche pack, what they're doing with reliving science, history, drama, all of the good things, science, drama, physical economy, the whole principles of knowledge, philosophy, if all of this can be alive within people in Montreal and Canada, all the way north of the United States, but geographically, and you have all these things going on all over the world, I would say that the educational control is finished. It's already finished. We are the leadership. The people who participate with what we're doing are participating in leading humanity.
Yeah, I think one of the key things is that the entire system, including the education system, is based on a lie. The good thing you can always count on with a lie is that it breaks itself down after being applied for too long. So you sort of see the fact that already the entire education system, it's already discredited itself. And we know that, I mean, be it from science to economics to philosophy, everything that's been applied and taught in school, which we know has been applied because it generated globalization of the world we live in, seeing that the world we live in is literally coming apart, it seems. What we have to do is, I think, now act in the future state where people, and make that future state occur simultaneously, but where we know increasingly people are going to become more self-conscious, shocked, angry, scared of the fact that they've been miseducated now for a very long time. They thought they were getting something real. But the idea is, what are we going to supply as an alternative to a lie? But it's true. So, I mean, I think some of this stuff, we have to have a certain amount of realistic faith in where this process is going. To not just deal with, things are really fucked up right now. It's really,
so
it's hard.
I think of the problem, I think the answers. And kind of
in a serious way. Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, you're just going to get, the whole thing just functions off of intimidation. You know, everyone knows it's a Ponzi pyramid scheme, but every time somebody wants to open their mouth, it's all, shut up, you're going to have to screw up the whole game, you know?
You don't want to lose your job.
You don't want to lose your job, right? Totally intimidating. A lot of LaRouche has been all around the world organizing leadership, and people know this guy. I mean, it's not in the mass media, but Leadership of the World is very, very familiar with LaRouche, and they want to say, the best of them, you see this thing hitting, they're feeling the fire and flames now, they want to say the name, and up until now, the only thing holding them back is it's just this intimidation question. But as you can imagine, Ahmed didn't get, imagine him actually just getting a good advisor and somehow pointing out, saying the right thing, instead of calling, getting up there and calling Israel a war party who's full of racists, which maybe some of it might be very true, but rather than say something like that on the world stage, coming out and saying something a little bit more strategic, and what type of wildfire that would raise in all of these North African communities and Islamic nations that were all kind of applauding saying something so wacky. You can see how
but what they're afraid of is to stand up there and face Americans too.
They're not afraid. You see them doing it. They've got the passion, but they lack the sense in mind and what to do.
I would
have
wish I'd
come out come out with an actual tangible global emergency policy for these nations with the new economic system and policies. It's well known, so I think if any of these guys actually came out with in that direction and said it publicly and frequently, you would be in a totally different geometry right now. And you can go.
Why is it that people who know LaRouche don't have the guts? There's two kinds of people who can go out and say things which are true. The people who don't understand them and say things which appear crazy because you get a sense that the person doesn't understand what he's saying. Right? And so the people with reason say, well, I don't want to go say something which I don't know about. Right?
I don't think there's
good. If you have this program of science, it's not just so that we can discuss science for science sake, but when you go out organizing your like, let's say you go in a town hall meeting in Montreal, if you intervene, how do you have a sense of what you're saying is really something which is knowable, not something which came from an emotion of the moment, but is really an idea which can have some backing? And that's why the people like should come work the science. That's why the basement program exists. Mm-hmm. It's because you have these people who know a lot of facts. Like Bill Clinton probably knows a lot of facts. He probably can do some good, maybe, I don't know. He's probably being trained by LaRouche.
Jazz. Saxophone.
But they appear like wimps because they haven't worked on science. They don't have a sense of their identity able to know things is true. So what do? When you can't know something is true, you make a compromise.
Invent, lie to yourself.
Improvise.
Because you're not so sure
exactly like
that you can overstep what somebody else is saying as bullshit. So you're going to leave room for him in case he's right. Because you're not sure you know.
Man, I try to convince, you know, these thoughts, and the worst part is to get them convinced that the British has all the fault, you know. I mean the guy was in Sciences Politiques, you know, and he was always laughing at this table. Like, yeah, the British did it, huh? And he was making jokes about it, like, where's your pencil? The British took it. And, but being in Sciences Politiques, il a dit que, man, yeah, yeah, they took the British on pay, you know? I mean, like, how they destroyed the Ottoman Empire and the business with Suez. And so he has some ideas, but he wouldn't like to believe that there's a conspiracy in America, you know? So that's the hardest point, and another hard point, the thing with Greenpeace and Suzuki and all the ecologists, man. So it's such a tough, man, you know, to get the guy out of the box, I mean, such a tough.
And into the circle.
Into the circle.
Yeah, out of the box, into the sphere.
It's pretty hard to do.
But that's okay. That's a good process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instead of
no,
just
man,
talking
I
about
mean,
the
I try to find my own, you know, my own prove scientific.
Okay.
Scientific proofs, you know. Yeah, and I search a lot of articles like about global warming against and counter, and I mean it's tough to get the truth, you know. I mean there are so many factors like the solar cycle, and the last one with the orbit, I didn't get it, you know. I told the guy about the orbit and the change of climate because the inclination of the Earth changes, and he said, but shouldn't there be a change in the equinox, or, you know, like a physical change that we could see if you get the inclination otherwise? And well, I mean, I can't raise up to that. I mean, yeah, I know, I feel stupid.
But he's still giving you a room.
And I'm
probably
in
the room.
Why, it's just because you didn't study it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you were to study it
history,
and discover it for yourself, then you could tell the guy, look, that's how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you argue on on academic stuff with people, you're on their terrain, right? If you're an academic expert, you can talk academic all day, right? But what is the sphere of thought for which they're not used to argue? On what basis are they not used?
They're
to
afraid
to.
No,
so
man, that's the system they got into. I mean, I gave some of your articles, and they checked for the references, and they were like, he said the guy like, man, that's a scientist that isn't even approved or something like that. So they want arguments, man. I mean, how often if I won't give them arguments, they take me like ignorant, and eventually they ignore me.
I know your point.
I mean,
you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped.
Yeah,
nah,
but you can't say just have faith, man.
No,
you should
do this really good radio interview by this really great British guy on our named Lord Monckton. He's not a scientist, but he knows his stuff. And there's him for 15 minutes on against some hardcore, greeny, climatologist, but he's just a fanatic religious, like, ideologue. And you could literally just clinically, for your own case and what you'll learn from that and you'll be able to apply to other scenarios, is what Lord Monckton presents is a very calm, reasoned, point by point. You know, he just points out, this is the reality. There, you know, you got two arguments. One is based completely on popular opinion. Like, the consensus
yeah.
says.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, fundamentally, that's all the guy can do, because the world's climate has gotten 0.76 degrees warmer in the last 3 years, which, I mean, everybody's is bellyaching, and they're freaking out that in the last 150 years it's gotten 0.6 degrees colder. So you've got these, like, blatant paradoxes. I don't think he raised that one in particular.
That's on YouTube?
No, it's on the NASA website. There's no sunspot activity. You know, we're going into global cooling. So somebody says, you want to see something shocking. When they bring up some facts to you, you don't respond with more facts. You say something completely, it's a flank, right? Like, if they start bringing up all sorts of data about global warming, point out, no, we're on the verge of an ice age. We're going to global cooling.
And then
have something in your mind that you've done the work that you can actually back that up.
So you want to say to bring them on my train? Like,
make your
train.
Yeah, well, of course.
Not profound,
you got to do the work. Yeah. It was not that hard. Or, I mean, just talk, make fun of the Spanish Inquisition, you know?
Well,
like, that's some of the funnest discussions I've had is where I just get to think about, like, the high priesthood that started burning, you know, non-believers at the stake. And, you know, there's, you know, think about, because that's really the type of thing we've got right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you're a non-believer, you're a believer. And just make fun of them in that sense, kind of just laugh at it. Because you have a right to laugh at it.
The theory of the ice age appeared in newspapers and the media, you know?
That's one example. I mean, I'm not saying do that. I'm simply saying, like, there's a type of approach.
The thing is that what I'm searching for is something like...
You want a smoking gun.
Huh?
You want a smoking gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no.
You can't say that's black, you know? That's white all the day, you know? I mean, something that they cannot oppose.
You have to tell them about Sarpy.
Both Sarpy.
Yeah, Paolo Sarpy.
Or tell
I
tell
don't
him
know much about that guy. Just heard aujourd'hui.
Tell him Kepler disproved global warming 400 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he did.
Yeah.
He was thinking about the sun. Nobody else was thinking about the sun. So. They just wanted data.
Yeah, I mean the solar cycle ended in 2006. So anyway, a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. 11 year cycle?
Yeah, the 11 year cycle. But it could be a 13 year cycle, but it still would have ended a few years ago.
Right.
But I thought that because Arish filled the sea, the CO2 came out of it and se pusa continue, you know, like a chain reaction.
It's actually hypothesis. It's actually defendable.
There's
a
moderate passing pain.
Sorry.
Mais c'est ça la cause d'habitude.
Solar flares,
I guess. Oh, and the thing they said was like the global after the global warming comes an ice age or something like that. I mean, it was something related with an ice age. I don't know.
That's the sun.
Fuck me.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Fun.
Yeah. I don't
I'd
have.
Say, I'd say the way to go by really, I mean, becomes tomorrow.
What time?
We start at 10.
A.M.?
A.M.
Tomorrow's
we usually charge people to come, but tomorrow's free.
What?
We usually charge people to come, but tomorrow's free.
So, I don't think I'll be there for the singing part, but I'll be there for the science part.
You're
going to
stay at the door
until
they finish singing, man. You're going to stay at the door until they finish singing. Oh, bonjour.
Did I miss that too,
right?
Yeah.
But you guys want to know how a nuclear power plant
somehow we leave every night and we come back.
Like the uranium atom.
I don't know.
I saw some.
You know that?
Act of God, isn't there?
What about that?
One next to
you. Know?
Pretty cool, man.
I think there's a name.
It's still being more.
It's a very
issue.
I don't know.
Well, that's a kind kind of ideology.
I hope it's for the tools, so I hope the system does.
There's a devil in
this is like this is like the kind of thinking that we need. He's an economist at the Saskatchewan Government Insurance in Regina.
Rock red.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I hate him.
Is that an
idiot? He has no humor, right?
Presented by
Indy. Most of the math teachers and physics teachers I have in university,
really, they can, you know, fill the board
with
metrics, fill the equations, and
then I come with a simple joke, you know, referring to, you know, telling these schools that global warming is caused by driving your car.
I don't know where that is.
I had a last article on this subject.
It's on this street.
It's really scary.
It doesn't show us.
That doesn't make any
sense, man.
No, I'll show you
that.
It's like
the
same
thing. How a nuclear power plant generates
power.
So you have these rods.
They're going to be on by
of uranium.
Right
in a blanket of plutonium. What happens is that radioactive objects are like big atoms. That's why they're at the bottom of the table of elements. They're huge. And they're throwing electrons all over the place.
Yeah, right.
But this blanket here absorbs those electrons, creating heat.
Yeah.
Warming the what's
it? I'm going to go
it warms. Oh yeah, it warms a thing that turns this way of sodium. Sodium is salt,
water,
because it has a higher boiling point.
Yeah,
goes to around 450 degrees Celsius.
If you have salt in the water,
and it won't boil. It'll be that hot. And then from there, you have another cycle.